the Badlands. Explain those Badlands. That's a hell of a name.
What's up?
Well, I want to start by pushing back on Dak in the chat here, who's judging me because I said I have my coffee and my rum going. And he said, do you know what time it is? I know exactly what time it is. Okay? It's Cultural Heretics. It's afternoon. It's completely acceptable to be double fisting with rum and coffee.
Yeah, and it's the back half of the week.
You know, right.
Fuck it.
I don't know. I mean, this is the thing with Dak. You know, he's a judgmental guy. That's why nobody likes him.
If anything, you know, he's making you drink more with, mm-hmm. with all the judgment.
This is why I drink, Dak, because of you. But anyway, other than that, things are good. How are you doing, JR?
Good, man. I hope everyone out there is going good as well. I've had a really annoying month. My allergies have turned me into a total bitch boy this month, but all the pollen's finally going away. I'm breathing better. I'm thinking better. You know, I think what really bothered me about it the most is like, I tried to describe it to the allergist. I finally went this week. I was like, all the joy has just, it gets sucked out of my body. And I think that that's what sucks the most. And so now that we're finally past that, y'all don't have to listen to, my ass complain about little pollen spores.
Except for the whole intro to the show. You just bitched about it again. But
yeah, exactly. Right. And I'll probably keep doing it.
I saw S. Connor in the chat said, had a blast at my first Gart last weekend. Missed you guys burning right Julian's rum. Keep on keeping on. Gart Dallas was last week. Wasn't there, obviously. But I feel like I should promise on behalf of the audience that I'm going to force Julian's rum to go to a Gart this year. I think the one that makes sense is Myrtle Beach.
Okay.
I mean,
all right.
Come on, man. Well, it's not that far, right?
It's not that far. Hey, I'll do my damnedest. All right. Well, people probably hate our stupid back and forth on the front end. So let's do some ad reads and we can dive in.
That's what the people are here for.
They're here for that.
All right, first up, we've got Mid-Atlantic, our friends at Mid-Atlantic Business Alliance. Are you paying too much for your health insurance? The high cost of medical insurance is about to get more daunting, but Mid-Atlantic Business Alliance has the solution. For over 30 years, David Becker's been helping small businesses get the best possible PPO coverage at affordable rates. Mid-Atlantic Business Alliance is pleased to announce the addition of new United Healthcare PPO plans in addition to the Cigna policies. Whether you're a sole proprietor or an employer with a larger group, there are proven ways to reduce your costs and get the best coverage available. David Becker and his son Jesse are here to help you with the best possible PPO insurance coverage at the lowest possible rates. If you're stuck paying for your own insurance, why not give David and Jesse a call to see if they can help you too? Call for a free quote, 609-577-8557, or visit badlandsmedia.tv/Becker. That's badlandsmedia.tv/Becker. David Becker was in Dallas. I think he's been at all the Garts. I've even seen him at a personal event, at a wedding. Great guy, great supporter of ours. And I always say this when he sponsors these shows, he actually is in the info war. You know, we always appreciate all the companies we try to promote are America First companies, but it's extra cool when you've got Benson's or Becker's in the mix who are actively digging into all of the stuff that we're digging into on a daily basis.
Absolutely. Speaking of, Love Litter.
Next up, yeah, we've got Love Litters. Attention all Badlanders with purring pals and feathered friends. Say hello to Love Litters. 100% pure kiln-dried wood, free from chemicals and oh-so-kind to Mother Earth. No dust, no mess, no toxins, just a lightweight solution that's gentle on your wallet and even gentler in your home. Our biodegradable litter is crafted from wood destined for landfills, giving it a new purpose in your pet's life. Cats love it. Our astonishing formula works like magic to neutralize that notorious cat urine odor, keeping your home pine fresh and welcoming. For bird lovers, it zaps moisture from bird droppings, crumbling them away, all while being safe if pecked at or ingested. For reptiles and critters too, our mix is crafted to dilute the pine scent, ensuring those little lungs stay happy and healthy. Plus, every 30-pound bag of Love Litters will last up to 6 months, saving you money. Transform your pet care routine today. Visit badlandsmedia.tv/litter. That's badlandsmedia.tv/litter, and breathe easy with a litter that loves your pet as much as you do. I have to get myself some of this. I actually use walnut litter for my fuzzy friend because walnut I have been looking for natural litters. Because then when I go to like my parents' house and they're using the like store bought litter, it now just smells like chemicals if you go away from that stuff.
Oh yeah.
So you're like, man, it's probably not great to be breathing in, you know, ammonia and everything.
No, it's probably one of my only issues with like owning a cat would be having to keep the shit box in the house.
Yeah.
Especially since my place, there's no real good place to put it.
We have to put ours in the shower that we don't use. That's downstairs. So that's the, so hey, now TMI for any potential Badlands co-hosts that end up staying with us, we will remove and hide the litter box and pretend that we've not been keeping a litter box in the shower that we're going to make you use. Just as an FYI.
Got to do what you got to do. Well, it's been an interesting week. That's for sure. Aside from all the protests, you know, that all these intrepid college students feel they must act upon it. It's been kind of funny watching them. Just like, well, first of all, it's so coordinated and it's popping up everywhere. Like today, I think there's one that broke out on Emory, and they reported that most of them aren't even students. But what I found most interesting is that they're all wearing masks out of nowhere, like the COVID masks.
Interesting.
It's like an all
almost like they're trying to hide their faces.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the obvious part. But the second most obvious thing is like, okay, where did they get this directive from that they're doing this again? I mean, we all know these people are former masquerbaiters, like they loved them, but most had given it up aside from a few crazies. And to see them all wearing it again suddenly, it's sort of like, all right, well, first of all, we all know what you're doing. Second of all, who exactly told you to do this? Because I mean it's just, it's like, again, one of those like Fed directed operations or Soros directed operations where obviously there's a central command structure to this bullshit. But
we talk about sometimes the compartmentalization aspects of even our theories on Patriot plans and all of that. But it's one of the things that I think when you're sort of a newbie conspiracy theorist or truther, you start to get overwhelmed because you're like, how could it be all of these people involved in it? But you don't need that much, you know, like remember the Black Lives Matter is a great example. You had a small handful of people literally running the organization who were laundering literally millions and millions of dollars. And that's all you need. All you need is them to be getting directives from whoever they're getting directives for. And then you have, that's where the term useful idiot comes from. You have all the useful idiots that are Soylent and low testosterone that are in the, crowds, couple of agent provocateurs, and you've got yourself a seemingly organic riot.
Yeah, and as far as like the how it works with the pyramid control and like controlling certain key positions, I think when I first started out trying to understand this shit, it was sort of like, oh well, what they do is they just corrupt from the top of the pyramid down, right? So you know, if they get that one key position, you know, that leads the company / nonprofit, then you can just corrupt down from there. But I think one thing I've realized as this bullshit has gone on is that that's true. But what's also true is they will target key positions on the bottom of the pyramid too. So, you know, I think a good example of this would be, you know, all the low level corruption we saw from people handling ballots and like, you know, the Georgia elections. So I think that that's one thing that's important to understand is that it's not just the top of the pyramid. It's also, you know, these key levers within the pyramid itself, you know, regardless of their rank, as long as they exercise, like a guy could be like on the lowest rung, but if he's, you know, one of his central duties is to push the button that keeps the lights on, you know, he actually has a pretty important job. One way of thinking of it is how the mob operates. Right. You know, so like one of my favorite movies, Goodfellas, one of the ways they were able to pull off the Lufthansa heist was they corrupted the security guard, you know, that had the keys, you know, which got into all the cargo. So anyhow.
Yeah. Yeah, man, it's, you know, this is one of the more controversial subjects as well. Specifically, my co-host on Sunday nights, Just Human, gets a lot of flack for it. But when you bring up J6, talking about agent provocateurs, talking about top down, you know, John Harold often talks about the devolution sandwich, which is this idea that if there is a top down Patriot plan, a huge part of the plan is us. You and I certainly are big Q people, and that's a big part of that. He calls it the devolution sandwich. You've got to kind of meet in the middle to save the country. Well, that's a reversal of what you're talking about, which right. is the deep state has done this, right? One of the things that Kyle gets a lot of flack for, but I think people in this community need to take seriously, is that there is an automatic assumption made among MAGA that everybody who is in jail over January 6th is a MAGA person who was either completely innocent or got roped up into something that they didn't intend. And Kyle's dug into a lot of these court documents about J6, and a lot of the people, I'm not saying all of them, and Trump has said that there will be pardons issued and that there's probably shrapnel every which way here. But I think it's a dangerous assumption that we make where we'll be the first ones to say that if anything violent happened, it was agent provocateurs and feds, right? But then we assume that the people that are in prison calling themselves MAGA are not those feds, right?
Oh, yeah. I totally agree. I mean, yeah. It's one of the things that I've actually thought for a long time. And to your point, it's one of those things you'll get a lot of flack if you take this position. But it makes sense in a lot of ways. You know, I mean, if they're still playing a role, you know, be it for white hats, black hats, to be feds in prison, because if you want to believe that white hats are actually pretty in control of this grand operation, you would also have to believe that they would do a pretty good job of ensuring that innocent, you know, Joe Schmoes, you know, like your aunt that just happened to show up, wouldn't be thrown into right. this prison situation. Now, right. I'm not saying they're all powerful and capable of preventing everything. Of course, we know that's not true. But to me, again, something about it just smells like a Fed operation. Mm-hmm. But I want to stress, I don't think it's necessarily, because when we say a Fed operation, we immediately give it a negative connotation.
Yeah.
And I think that there are good feds out there too, that they realize
there were a lot of good feds there that day.
Yes.
Who do you think was collecting all the information? That's
right.
Exactly.
So there are roles within roles. And
yep.
I mean, hopefully the truth comes out, you know, but
yep.
be patient. Speaking of clowns though, the clown crown of the week, I'm sure most people have seen this video, but I'm going to play it anyways. It's our old friend, Hillary Clinton.
You know, his bromance with Putin, and it was actually called that, I think, by the former prime minister of Australia, who said he saw Trump with Putin, and Trump was like, you know, just gaga over Putin, because Putin does what he would like to do, kill his opposition, imprison his opposition, drive, you know, journalists and others into exile, rule without any check or balance.
Dude, you look in the fucking mirror, you stupid Muppet.
I didn't think I haven't seen that clip, but I didn't think I would agree with Hillary Clinton, but I 100% I'm on board. I totally agree that they're bros.
Yeah, they are. Well, again, first of all, let's just unpack this from the beginning. We all know, just like the man at the end of the video so aptly put it, that you are the one who does these things. I mean, like, there's literally a term for you killing people. It's called Arkansas. And for her to get, you know, in front of this monitor and be like, Trump wants to kill us all if he gets back in power, dude, it's like, bitch, you've been doing that for like 30, 40 plus years. So
and who does he want to kill? I mean, are we actually, yeah, I won't go too far on that, but
but that's the second part of it, right? It's they're getting ahead of it. So it's sort of like, mm-hmm. we all know that all these people at least deserve a life prison sentence. Okay. So when inevitably, you know, they have to answer to justice, they can then fall back on things like that and say, well, see, look, we predicted that Trump was going to be a fascist and he was going to try and throw us all in prison unjustly and, you know, send us to the gallows. And I hate how slimy they are with this shit. It's so conniving but genius at the same time. I mean, they know exactly what pages to pull out of the playbook every time. And it makes me think of, you know, when Jesus said, be as wise as serpents and as gentle as doves. It's like these people are, I would say, as conniving as serpents. And it just pisses me off because, you know, they take advantage of our gentleness at the same time. But that's also why I love Trump, because he's sort of that materialized answer to all the serpents out there. He's like, you're not going to fuck with me. I'm the totem for the American people, and I'm the fist that they've been wanting to throw.
Right. You know, actually, speaking of serpents, it's actually kind of interesting that Trump routinely tells the story of the serpent at his rallies. You've probably heard him, forget what the story is called. Somebody in chat will bring it up. Not the serpent in the Garden of Eden, but he tells a little story about serpents often. So, you know, those are those signals that he sends out there, the way he communicates. I've written a series on my Substack called The Master, that's all about his mastery of narrative warfare, which is storytelling. And, you know, the enemy, what you're seeing Clinton do right there is tell a story. And in the past, it worked. And I would say this is where I'm kind of notorious for this, but where it doesn't frustrate me anymore is that while I agree with everything you said and what you laid out, when I see Hillary making the rounds and telling her same old stories and trying to reverse things and, you know, hit Trump with the reverse Uno card, I really do see it nowadays as a reverse indicator, a negative indicator of, like you said, they're trying to get ahead of something. That means that things are not going in the direction that they want them to go. And I'm going to get to this in a segment later on in this show. But I sometimes think I often think that the most encouraging narrative patterns in the info war are what I call panic patterns that are coming out of the enemy. Often those are more steadying to me even than deployments out of Trump and out of Patriots, because it's one thing for your kind of leader, ideological leader or battlefield commander to be pumping you up. That's their job, right? Like you don't want somebody who's demoralizing. But when you see the other side kind of doing the opposite and panicking a bit, like there's a, if you play a Total War video game or if you study the history of battlefield tactics and everything, morale is a massive, massive component of war, especially medieval warfare, where you were dealing with swords and shields and bows and arrows. As soon as as soon as you get people in the front line of soldiers to turn around and start moving backwards, the cascading effect that has on the rest of that army is catastrophic. And I think we're starting to see that with some of these sort of panicked, don't let him back in there because of what he'll do. It's like, hold on, I thought Joe Biden was going to win. What do you mean don't let him back in there? What are you so worried about?
Well, and what's also worth adding to that, the only thing that I think is preventing a mass retreat on their part, and, you know, because to me, the mass retreat really should have started in 2017. However, their system of blackmail, fear, and control is what holds them together, right? It's not motivated so much by like a belief in their sick ideology as it is that they're all compromised. And they know that if they retreat, then they're screwed in some way, shape, or form. Either, you know, they're going to get Arkansas-ed, or they're going to, you know, have, you know, some video of them with like an underage minor, yeah, whatever it is. And the thing about it is that's not a long-term strategy as far as keeping an army together. You know, eventually morale is going to dip so low where it will crumble, and you can just see them holding by a thread. And that's why I kind of saw her video too, is it's a little bit of a threat to other members of her gaggle, which is like, you know, I have the capability to off all of you. And, right. you know, it sounds like I'm talking about Trump, but I'm actually talking about me. So stay in line.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's and like Chat pointed out, she's looking more and more. I think PJ Corrigan said in here, looking more and more like George Soros every day. I believe Steve Bannon, Chris Paul had pointed out to me last night that Steve Bannon referred to her as Jabba the Hutt. So, yeah, I mean, they're not looking so great, if that's any indicator of how they're feeling.
The gravity of the situation is definitely pulling her skin down.
Yes, circa reminds one of 2016. My crown clown, I'm going to hit Hollywood. This pains me. If you want to share my screen here, I'll just play about a minute of this. It's Zack Snyder, a director that I have traditionally liked quite a bit. But man, this isn't ideological. This is more just cringy. He had a movie, Rebel Moon Part 2, come out on Netflix last week. Part 1 is one of the worst sci-fi movies I have seen in a decade, if not ever. Part 2, I will not watch. I've heard it's even worse. But it's not that he made a piece of shit movie for streaming, when he's capable, in my opinion, of making some great stuff. It's his defense. I do not like seeing artists shamelessly defend obvious crap, and attack their audiences over doing so. And, take a listen here. This is from Gary on Nerdrotic, one of the good guys on YouTube.
And after the 21% critic score and the rather too high 57% audience score, along with the 31% Metacritic score and the 5.6 out of 10 IMDb score, the cope began.
You may love or hate my movies,
and they're yours. 100%,
I'm 100% fine with that, but a vote against me is a vote for the focus group version. Right. Just know that.
Yeah.
Know that by saying, you know, Snyder sucks, you're also saying, you know what? Give me some more focus groups.
If that movie was in the theater as a distribution model, so that's 160 million account or people supposedly watching based on that math. So 160 million people at $10 a ticket, 160 million times 10, that's 1.6 billion, you know. So like you look at the view numbers, you can use that rough
people.
90 so million right now.
Assume
so
two
like,
view.
It's well, like 90 million count.
That's the kind said, of
turned it off.
So 160 million people at $10 a
and like you know, 90 million Rebel would Moon, be right, people account.
90 million people.
Start. The zeitgeist is crazy.
So like Rebel right Moon.
90 million right now. Account. You know, so more people probably saw Rebel Moon than saw Barbie in the theater, right?
Right.
Right.
Unfortunately, none of the criticism or their ability to use any of their five senses is going to deter Netflix or Zack Snyder from releasing what is now possibly going to be part two of a six-part trilogy.
Oh, and God.
So the reason I bring this up is instead of just kind of being like, you know, I've got a particular style. We really went for it on this one. At least a lot of people watched it. It's a streaming movie. I like it. It's okay if you don't like it. He starts just rattling off how many people watched it. I mean, if you're now using viewer numbers on Netflix, which is like, there's some occasional good stuff on Netflix, but it's known as just drivel. It's known as people sit down and watch stuff. They're not curating their content. They will watch anything that's there. And He's had many other interviews in the last couple weeks where he's basically just been attacking people who don't like the movie. And it's like, dude, it's as a writer myself, as a person with a functioning brain, mostly. It's one of the worst blockbuster movies I've ever seen. There's no character arc. The characters explain their backstory, literally, verbally explain their backstories to each other. It breaks every writing rule in the world. It's a shameless ripoff of Star Wars, but with none of the good stuff. It's got no heart. It does what Snyder typically has not done and really gives you the strong whammin, you know, 107-pound female action heroes taking down 220-pound stuntmen in every fight scene. It's absolute unmitigated shit. And Snyder should be ashamed of himself. And he's made some of my favorite movies, so it's just been disappointing to see. So he
which
is
one?
A clown.
Which one's your favorite?
Man, I mean, I'm a big defender of his adaptation of Watchmen. I know some comic book readers don't like that, but I think it's pretty great. I'm a fan of 300. It's simple, but very stylistic. I also thought his remake of Dawn of the Dead is really good. You know, they're not my favorite movies, but they're really entertaining. Right. And then, you know, I thought his recent Army of the Dead was just okay. But this is the first time before, besides, I would say, Sucker Punch, which is also crap. Yeah. This is the first time he's made something that is, that I would just consider disaster. And I would also say, as another feather in his cap, I'm also a defender of the Man of Steel movie. As somebody you mentioned last week, I don't typically like Superman, but I actually kind of liked his version of Superman. But yeah.
Yeah, it's, but it's then things went off the rails with all the Justice League movies.
It did.
My question is, when did Netflix start releasing which content is streamed? And because I'm not aware of a way to look at how many people have streamed Rebel Moon. Is it like in their earnings?
They release
calls?
Weekly charts now. There's now weekly Netflix viewership charts. They just started doing this about a year ago, so now they're actually showing people viewer numbers. They're their internal numbers, so you've got to take them.
Well, I was going to say, though, I mean, how do you know you can really trust them? See, the nice thing about the box office and going to films, right, is that there is a dollar figure amount attached to these films, which is not lying. It's like people are going to the movie theater. They are paying money to see this movie, and they're even going back to see this movie over and over again. I feel like one of the contributors to all content going to shit is the fact that streaming has been able to sort of hide that nobody is actually watching these movies and enjoying them. Yeah. And what Netflix will do is they'll just shove it in the trending section or, you know, top watch. And it's like bullshit. You know, no one's watching Rebel Moon. And if they are, they watch like the first 5 minutes of it and, you know, turn it off, whatever it may be. But it just sucks because like there's sort of an accountability system that the box office had, you know, on creating good content that these streaming services don't. It's like, you know, South Park kind of lampooned this with the whole like, this is Netflix, you're greenlit, you know, that where they were just greenlighting everything. Because it seems to me that their method of making money is just borrowing a shitload of it. Yeah. And I call me crazy. I just don't know that that seems like a viable business model.
Yeah. It's, you know, it reminds me of like, I mentioned an anecdote on a recent show where I have a family member. He married into the family, married my cousin, good guy, but he's a huge sports guy. And I'm a sports guy too. We'll talk about quarterbacks and this and that, but he's a shameless New England contrarian, right? So he grew up, if his parents liked the Red Sox, he liked the Yankees. If you liked the Patriots, he liked the Packers, like that, all that kind of shit, right? And I realized that I could no longer take him seriously when we were having a Tom Brady argument, and he doesn't like him, and okay, fine. A lot of people don't like him. It's okay to me if you come in and say, I think Joe Montana had a better run, right? If you're talking about a tier of a Mount Rushmore of quarterbacks, we can have some arguments back and forth about who was the best at what, right? But he came at me with Jameis Winston is better than Tom Brady, when Jameis Winston was a Tampa Bay Buck quarterback. I mean, for those who don't follow the NFL, Jameis Winston's one of the worst quarterbacks of the last 30 years. He's unmitigated trash. He's like, if you lit a bag of dog crap on fire and threw it onto the field, it would play better quarterback than Jameis Winston. And this was his argument. So it's kind of like, the reason I think of it with Snyder is you're trying to advance the argument that you have created high art in the form of Rebel Moon in the same release window in which Denis Villeneuve is sitting over there with Dune.
Right.
In the same genre, right? You just need to shut your mouth and go and sit on the bench and collect your paycheck that they shouldn't have given you and just hope that they don't notice, that the suits in Hollywood don't notice how horrible your work has been over the last few years. But to come out here and defend it as if it's good, it left a bad taste in my mouth as somebody who used to really like him.
Yeah, and You know, it's funny because you're talking about people who just enjoy being contrarians, right? Destiny, mm-hmm. for anyone who doesn't know this guy, oh, yeah. Jordan, he is like the perfect example, like, which is he will literally disagree with you on any point whatsoever just so he can have the dopamine from a contrarian argument. And we're yeah. all guilty of it to a certain degree. It is kind of fun, you know, disagreeing with someone just to see how much, you know, triggering you can get out of them. But then there are those toxic contrarians that they are just... Yeah. They're doing it because that's the only thing that they enjoy doing, right. You know, but I don't know. I don't know what the hell it's like all these directors, you know, Snyder's not the only one. There's so many directors and producers that have just all of a sudden, you know, over the past 5 years turned into different people almost. And, you know, I don't know if that's part of some grander plan, but It sucked to see. You're like, God, man, I used to respect the shit that you pumped out, but
yeah,
it's like, what the hell happened?
Just shit.
Let's speaking go on of
to
things,
some heroes, though. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But speaking of things that aren't shit, this is a reminder to please throw us some love, throw us a like if you would. We really appreciate the likes. That's all the whoring out I will do for likes today, or don't like it. Do whatever you want, but I promise that'll. Like yeah, maybe you should. But speaking of heretical heroes, so mine this week was actually Tucker. So I don't know if any of you folks out there had a chance to catch some of Tucker Carlson's visit to Joe Rogan's podcast, but it was very, very interesting. I think one of the clips which got the most traction was his discussion on what UFOs and aliens really are. And Tucker has sort of taken a different position of it later in life. And I am of the same belief, but I'll let the clip play first and we can talk about it after.
Okay. So the template that you're using to understand this is like science fiction, right? These are an advanced race of beings from somewhere else. But the template that every other society before us has used is a spiritual one. Mm-hmm. There is a whole world that we can't see that acts on people, a supernatural world. It's acting on us all the time for good and bad. Every society has thought this before ours. In mm-hmm. fact, every society in all recorded history has thought that until, I'll be specific, August 1945, when we dropped the atom bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and all of a sudden the West is just officially secular. We're God. There is no God but us. And that's the world that we have grown up in, but that's an anomaly. Like, no one else has ever thought that. There's never been a society that thought that. Every other society has assumed, and they've had all kinds of different explanations, and the details differ, but the core idea does not differ, never has differed from caves until now, that we're being acted on by spiritual forces at all times. And so to someone born before or living before 1945, I think it would have been much more obvious that this is the thing that every society has written about. Mm. And in fact, that battle, that unseen battle around us, that spiritual battle has like been the basis of every society, of every religion, not just Christianity.
So there's a much longer clip of it on YouTube. I definitely invite you all to go watch that.
That was on high speed, by the way. Chat was like, what was happening right here?
Oh, I did. I modified. You just have to get over it. If I didn't do that, it was going to be like a minute and like 40 seconds long, which is too fucking long. That, believe it or not, it was faster, and I actually slowed it down a little bit. But that I guess I'll stop speeding up videos and we can just take up more time with clips. But this is a position that I started taking too. Around about like 2017-18, I don't really delve into the topic of aliens much because in my opinion I don't think there's any subject that is more loaded with disinformation from every yeah. direction. You know, you have, you know, the folks who believe they are aliens and reptilians, et cetera, then you have like, you know, the you know, their Nephilim, or you know, it's Project Bluebeam and all this stuff. And so one day I actually started reading like Jacques Vallée's book. It was written in the 60s. It's called Passport to, I think, like Magonia or something like that. But what the book is essentially about is how the way these UFOs and seemingly extraterrestrials behave and sort of the rituals they bring their contactees through is very similar to tales people would tell, you know, in the Middle Ages and ancient times about their encounters with, you know, like the fairy folk or, you know, other mythical creatures. And that's when Jacques Vallée, and again, he's one of the most famous ufologists out there. He actually started to believe that these things are not aliens. They're telling us these things, but they don't seem to be at all. And one of the things that he pointed out, and from my own research, I noticed that if you turn back the clock, like the first, you know, alien encounters, like these aliens would claim to be, oh, you know, I'm from Mars or I'm from moon of Venus. And, but then of course we discover that, you know, these are actually barren planets, you know, because back in the day, people before, you know, we actually explored our galaxy thought that, you know, hey, Mars could be just like Earth and blah, blah, blah. And we come to find out it's not. What I'm trying to say is that it's like these entities, first of all, they're lying their asses off and they're always right on the line of like what humans think they know right now. Another good example of this, and a lot of people don't know about this, in the late 1800s, there was this huge craze of airship sightings. It was like the pre-UFO trend where everyone was seeing these huge airships in the sky and having encounters with, supposedly with the pilots of these airships. And when I say airships, they look like blimps, Hindenburgs. They were described as having propellers on them, but no one could ever actually get a whole lot of evidence about it, but everyone was seeing them. The point that I'm trying to make is that it wasn't like people were really seeing, you know, these silver disc like UFOs. Then they were seeing, you know, the cusp of their knowledge, because I think around that time, that's when, you know, the Germans were experimenting with, you know, the huge blimps and shit. And, you know, suddenly there was this fervor around, oh, you know, we can go into the sky. But I think the reason I think too, that I put Tucker under the cultural or that heretical hero of the week is that it's weird how it's become heretical to say that these things aren't aliens, because that is the mainstream produced narrative is that, No, these things are aliens. You know, you turn on History Channel, even the government, they do everything they can to sort of nudge you into believing that, yeah, these are extraterrestrials, whatever. Right. And that was a red flag to me. And the other thing, too, is like they don't behave like biological beings whatsoever. I highly recommend checking out this channel on YouTube. It's called Beyond Creepy. And he just has like these 10-minute long videos that are recounting encounters with like cryptids, ETs, et cetera, et cetera. And you notice these weird trends, but then you also notice the wild variability between them. Like, you know, they're never quite in the same ship. They never quite look the same. Sometimes they're able to talk. Sometimes they're not able to talk. You know, sometimes they're not able to walk and they just float over the ground. Sometimes they walk like robots. And that's the thing where you kind of like, you start to feel like these are entities that aren't from our dimension. And, you know, so people would say, oh, well, they're just ultra dimensional or extra dimensional entities. To me, I mean, that's essentially a demon. And what's really interesting too about like the stories that they tell, like their contactees, it's always about Earth worship. Like, it's like a warning, like, oh, you know, you need to take care of Mother Earth. You know, we are more knowledgeable than you. And it just pains us to see you destroying the Earth with, you know, your nuclear bombs and your pollution. And then you listen to, you know, all the libs, and it's like, that's exactly what they're parroting. Yeah. And it seems like they're trying to build up sort of whatever these things are, a mythology that is going to lead humans astray. And I'm with Tucker on that one.
Yeah, I think it's a great, it's a really interesting discussion. I've long said, one of the things I've said on Power Hour a few times and probably on Defected is that if aliens are real, they're gay for not introducing themselves in a more clear manner. And if they're fake, they're gay for not being real. But that's kind of my way of saying what you said, is that I think it's one of the biggest distraction events, whether they are real or not. And I like the way you laid that out. I mean, I've had my own journey of faith in the last several years. Many of us have that were not religious before the advent of Q and all of that. It's not like that converted me, but you know, it's the, I've said before that it's the presence of evil and the delving into the dark that brought me to the light. I'd written a whole feature about that recently. And I agree. I mean, I like, it's interesting. I talked about in the Hillary Clinton segment earlier on this episode that I often use negative indicators more often than positive indicators or active indicators. When I was a fighter, I was a counter-striker. Counter-striking, in my opinion, is much more effective than being an offensive-minded striker, because you're mapping enemy movements, you're patterning enemy movements, and then you've got a much higher percent chance of making the right decision if you understand what your enemy is doing. You kind of move around, you take the first round, you move, you watch how they move, you watch how they react. In the second round, that's when you put them down. And you take a lot less damage fighting that way. And I think that a lot of the tenets of martial arts and combat apply to the info war. There's a reason we use war terminology. It is a war. It's a war for our minds. And I agree with you that some people will be like, oh, why don't you delve into the alien stuff or anything? Because the establishment, as you said, they want us to be talking about aliens. They want us to delve into this. You mentioned the word mythology. And they basically, we talked about last week, scientism is the new religion.
Correct. And
aliens are sort of the ultimate myth or deity.
Or the angelic gods. Yes, exactly.
They're the gods of scientism. And I totally agree with you. Then you start asking the question, okay, if this is a psyop, it doesn't mean that it's fake. It doesn't mean that none of this stuff is happening. It just means that the story we're being told about it is fake, right? So what would they be trying to obscure? And I like the way you laid that out. I like the way Tucker did. What they would be trying to obscure is the truth of what extra-dimensional beings are. Because, and you'd say, well, why would they care if we were thinking they're demons versus aliens or extraterrestrials? Well, because if demons are real, then what else is real? The antithesis of demons, world. Right?
Yeah.
The spiritual realm is real, and that is what the story of extraterrestrials and extra-dimensional beings. And you know, one more point on this would be that I've always said that one of the great ironies is going to be the day when the establishment and the people brainwashed by the establishment start to call us conspiracy theorists for not believing in the alien narratives.
Exactly.
That's where it's going, and it's going to be funny and bizarre when we get there.
Well, and to tag on to that, so someone brought up Ancient Aliens. This is another great example. Walt Disney Company owns the History Channel, y'all. Okay, so you're talking about these power structures actively pushing this, like, aliens, you know, are everywhere. Yep. They did everything in the past.
All of our
aliens,
history.
Aliens, yep. Aliens, you know, but they can operate under the guise of, like, it's funny because they, you know, back then that was sort of like they always made fun of ancient alien people. But now it's become like a mainstream discussion topic. But, you know, one thing that you'll never see ancient aliens talk about is, well, is it possible, first of all, that they were interacting with entities that weren't aliens, that were, you know, spiritual beings? I mean, you'll never hear that, because again, the industrial complex of this is to ground you into the material world. It is replacing, you know, our previous history of a spiritual understanding of the world that we cannot see, and sucking you further into the world of materialism. And, you know, it's sort of replacing, you know, God with these, as you said, alien deities. And that's what is so insidious too about Ancient Aliens, is that it's basically saying that, oh, the gods of the past were aliens. That's like the whole Stargate bullshit, you know, and they just push it.
That's what they want, anyways, us, because they're these ultimate, the story is that they're these ultimate evolved beings. And one more shout out to Tucker in this interview. I didn't watch the whole thing, but I watched some clips from it. I like that he pushed back on Rogan's just supposition of evolution being a real thing. And as a former lefty who believed in the science, that was one of my big red pills, is diving into Darwinism and finding out it is complete and utter bullshit.
Yep,
there is no evidence whatsoever that Darwinism has any basis in reality. In fact, there is copious evidence to suggest that it does not. And there's a direct line from Darwinism up through to the deification of highly advanced biological beings such as aliens. Right. It's a direct line. It's the same
exactly.
story.
Exactly. They're further down the evolutionary tract. And, you know, I mean, and I love, and he's got a lot of crap over the past 2 days for having the balls to say, I think evolution is probably bullshit, because it's been force fed to us. And I'll be honest, I used to be one of those people. I was like, well, evolution is obviously real. You know, I mean, time over millions of billions of years. I mean, look at, you know, apes, like they're similar to us. But man, I started reading and watching some great documentaries about this. And it's like, hey, there are massive problems, especially, you know, things like the gaps between, you know, that it would take from these hominids to get to human beings. There has never been any evidence found, you know, no skeletons, which indicate, you know, an in-between humans and hominids. It's just not there. And like a similar thing to this, like, you know, Darwinists, what they really depend on more than anything is time. Time is their best friend, because it's like, all right, but it took 20 billion years. That's why it's, you know, it's hard to see, because it's impossible for us to see it. But it happened over such a large expanse, yada, yada. But one of the things I learned, too, about, say, things like carbon dating, for example, the guy who invented carbon dating actually said it's useless past, I think, something like 15,000 years.
Right.
Maybe it's a little bit longer, because the conditions change in the Earth, which will give you false readings as to how old something really is. Because carbon dating is dependent on assuming that the conditions that we're experiencing on Earth today are the same as they were 10,000 years ago. Therefore, you know, you can measure the, you know, how old something is accurately. And it's just not the truth. It's not the truth at all. You know, I don't claim to know how old anything is, but I always just laugh when people state matter-of-factly like, well, you know, 500 million years ago, the Earth is 1.8 billion years old. It's like, dude, you don't fucking know that. You know, when, you can talk about the...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, they can talk about like, oh, the, you know, well, the fuzz that's left over from the Big Bang, you know, and blah, blah, blah. It's like, you don't know. You don't know that.
It's when you reframe the established scientific establishment as the modern clergy that are the gatekeepers of information. They're just telling you a story. And when you reframe leftist and scientific belief as faith-based belief, which is exactly what it is. When you mention time horizons, you're right that that's one of their big key weapons to keeping faith. This is unknowable. It's the same thing that happens in the economic realm. When the Federal Reserve announces that they're printing $2 trillion, we can't conceive of that kind of a number. So we go, oh, well, this institution with experts in it and a government behind them must have a reason for how they've come up with this impossibly large, impossibly complex number. The truth is they didn't. They just fucking made it up like everything else.
Yep.
And one little tidbit on me when it comes to evolution, my name, Burning Bright, my name in this community, came from the first thing that started to get me to, it was one of those weird God moments that I questioned evolution. I love tigers. Tigers are my favorite animal, always have been. And the poem, Burning Bright, it starts, "Tiger, tiger, burning bright in the forests of the night. What immortal hand or eye could frame thy fearful symmetry?" And it's my favorite poem because I think that tigers are proof of the existence of God. And I thought this before I was into the Q stuff or anything else, because it does not make sense that a creature this beautiful and deadly and such a paradox of beauty and violence could have evolved. It doesn't make any sense. That's just my personal journey to this kind of stuff. And it's kind of interesting because people have been saying this for a long, long time, hundreds and hundreds of years.
You made a point within a point. I don't think you just realized that, which is you called, a tiger beautiful. Beauty is something that in the atheistic view shouldn't exist. Like, why do we recognize things that are beautiful? You know, there is no evolutionary benefit to thinking, you know, a waterfall is beautiful, or a painting is beautiful, or a building is beautiful. It's something that seems, you know, beyond the materialist. And it's obviously something that no other living organism has except for humans, which is to say the appreciation of beauty.
Right.
And I love it because that kind of gnaws at atheists too, because they have to sort of admit that, like, okay, yeah, like everything is pointless, but we recognize beauty because, you know, somehow like recognizing beauty is going to help us, you know, find food or, you know, bang a hot chick or something like that. And it's just, that's just not, it's not true.
No, it's inherent. Yep. Chris Paul often says, you know, talks a lot about relative morality and moral systems, systemic thinking. It's evil thinking. I like also that I shit on Tucker sometimes, and because, you know, the CIA stuff, all that kind of thing, I think we should always look at message over messenger. But, you know, in this segment, it's the net effects, signal over the noise. And there were some things in here too. He said about weak people are hosts for evil. Weak people become hosts for evil. That's why they're not deserving. You know, people that masked up and vaxxed up and shamed all of us, they're not deserving of hatred necessarily. Maybe they can be deserving of forgiveness, but they're not deserving of respect. Respect is not something I apply to weak human beings, because
pity is probably the best word.
Yep. All right. My heretical hero is a weird collective I'm going to do. So I'm going to apply a term to a group of people. I'm going to say dumb Zoomer chicks are actually my heretical heroes this week. We're going to watch a couple clips here, and there's a method to the madness.
You realize that all of the gains in the price of the stock market aren't due to the stocks in the companies becoming that much more valuable. They're due to the dollar being worth that much less. There's some funny videos going around about, you know, young women in America talking about inflation and currency and all the things that are going wrong. And although they can't articulate why these things are happening in the right way or ways that even remotely make sense, they're pretty entertaining. They do highlight a critical point that everybody is starting to sense that something is wrong. Something is fundamentally broken.
Hey, so you know what I don't fucking understand? This is why I don't understand. See this? See this? See that? This. This is worth $50? This is worth $5? This is the exact same piece of fucking plastic. This is the same thing. We made up these arbitrary numbers, and then we said we can't print more or else it'll be worthless. How about just don't let it be worthless? How about just don't tell anybody, or just like don't let it happen? We literally made this up. This is a construct we made up. Just don't let it inflate. Just don't, like, people, I get inflate, but I don't, like, just don't let it. You
and then I will play one more little clip here, and then make my point. This is about the college campus stuff that's been going on. So brilliant young Zoomer chick was asked why she's protesting. I want to share my screen here. Young woman was asked, why are we protesting here?
Let me guess, she doesn't know.
And what would you say is the main goal with tonight's protest?
I think the goal is just showing our support for Palestine and demanding that NYU stops. I honestly don't know all of what NYU's doing.
Is there something that NYU's doing?
I really don't know. I'm pretty sure they're... Do you know what NYU's doing? About Israel. Why are we protesting here?
Palestine will be free!
I wish I was more educated.
I'm not either. I came from Columbia. I was there off at Columbia, and we came down. They said NYU students needed our support. So I came down. I heard there's lots of cops. Some people were saying it was getting dangerous.
And what would you say is the main...
Okay, so you may be confused, not just for subjecting yourself to that, but that dumb Zoomer chicks are my heretical heroes of the week. So what both of those young women in the first clip, the Canadian with the money, and then the second one with the Zoomer chicks talking about how they wish they were more educated and they don't understand what they're doing, they're right. So the first one was saying, we just made up the values on this money, and I don't understand inflation, but I understand inflation. Why don't we just make more of it? So she's right in terms of that's what the Federal Reserve does.
Right.
Is they just make stuff up, and we just accept that inflation is just a thing, because what's really happening and what these Zoomer chicks don't understand, and it's not their fault, it's because our education system is specifically designed to stop them from understanding these things. What the truth is that the 2 to 1,000,000% inflation rate is direct theft, where the establishment buys our assets for pennies on the dollar, inflates our value away, and steals those assets for us using planned economic crises in the form of wars. If you want a 15-second snippet of every conspiracy theory ever, that's it. All wars are the direct result of bankers creating a war to inflate monetary supplies so that they can steal the assets from everybody like us who loses them because we're being paid in currency that they destroy. That's the answer to that Zoomer chick's question in the first one, but it takes a lifetime of study to understand that. The second one, what are the students protesting at Columbia University and NYU? Nothing. Nothing.
No.
The answer is nothing. And you have been suckered into going to a protest and protesting nothing on behalf of globalists who want you committing violence and social unrest in order to fight back against something. And so they're my heroes because the more what you witness in those clips is cognitive dissonance. They have no idea what's going on, but the good thing here is they're upset. And they're not upset at us anymore. They're upset at the establishment.
They admitted it out loud. You heard her say, like, I'm not educated. I wish I were more educated on it. But you kind of saw her brain break a little bit when those words left her mouth. She's like, it's like she's just like, oh, fuck, what am I doing here? Who put me here? I feel like sometimes their brains, like, have you ever driven home, you know, and then like realize that you didn't pay attention the entire way that you did it? That seems to be like where their brains are chemically, is sort of just they're on autopilot. It's like someone tells them that they're pissed off and you should go here. It's like Jedi mind tricks, dude. And these people just go. The first girl, one thing I want to touch on, I've talked about this in the past. So the printing of money and, you know, creating money from nothing, what it actually is, it's an occultic satanic principle, because what they're trying to do is imitate God. So there's this term within Christian theology called ex nihilo. It's a Latin term, and what it means is creation from or out of nothing. And there's only one person in the entire universe that is capable of doing that. That is God. Only God can create something out of nothing. But what these people are trying to do is imitate God by creating money from nothing. They did the same thing with Joe Biden's 81 million votes, is they created votes from nothing, right? And because we're all stooges that will just sit here and accept it, it's almost like in their eyes, it makes it legit. And to me, that's really like what the story of Babel was about and what the Tower of Babel really was. It was, you know, when it talks about their, you know, the language the language is being confused. I think like Troy McLaughlin talks about this a lot, is what Babel was really doing. It was that first system of monetary manipulation where they had corrupted God's weights and measures and created their own weights and measures and created their own system of value and money, etc. And that is essentially Satan trying to imitate God. He's not doing a good job of it, but that's what's happening.
Absolutely. And it doesn't wake people up until it affects them. And now it's affecting young. This is the first time in a long time that, you know, Zoomer chicks are running around wondering why they don't have any spending power. Usually they're not worried about that because daddy's got it taken care of. But the economy's rough right now. Inflation's out of control. They're starting to ask questions that generations that are under control don't usually ask. Nope. And usually, again, one more good point here, or good trend here, is usually when people start asking questions, it's when the deep state gets us into a war. And if you believe in the devolution theory, that's the position the enemy has been locked in. They don't have their war. They were supposed to have their war. She was never supposed to lose. They don't have the war. They don't have the story to explain the rampant theft of the American people. So now the people are waking up and going, what's going on here? Who's driving this car? So it's a good thing to see. Let me grab our other ads here before we
move buddy.
On. All right, we got our friends at No Bugs.
Oh
Beef.
Nope. Sorry, I jumped it. We're gonna go back to Benson.
Oh geez. All right, Benson Honey Farms. Badlanders love Benson Honey Farms, our first ever sponsor at Badlands Media. Indulge in the authentic, unpasteurized, 100% natural honey, product of diligent bees working the fields of wildflowers. It's as raw and robust as the spirit of Badlands. I have criticized the communist nature of bees in the past, but maybe I've been too harsh on them. I mean, we don't really know what's going on in beehives. We don't know how the hierarchy works. We don't know if there's elections. For all we know, they have free and fair elections, and they've got a robust ecosystem. They've kind of got zero-point energy. I mean, the honey is both the import and the export. Pretty interesting stuff. It's also delicious and really good for you. So if you want some of that delicious Nebraska honey, go to badlandsmedia.tv/honey and tell them we sent you. That's badlandsmedia.tv/honey.
You know, this isn't a transcendent thought or anything, but it just strikes me as kind of ironic that, you know, a bug that makes a delectable sweet thing can also sting the shit out of you and ruin your day.
Another paradox.
Man. Yeah. All right. Deep thoughts aside, let's go to No Bugs Beef.
All right. No Bugs Beef. Badlanders, have you tried No Bugs Beef yet? Don't be like CanCon. Don't eat it raw. Don't just pop it in your mouth as a freeze-dried piece of beef unless you want your stomach to fill up. Veteran-owned No Bugs Beef offers freeze-dried beef cubes and freezer boxes with steaks and roasts, all made from high-quality, all-American cattle, designed to last up to 20 years. It makes them a perfect choice for long-term food storage. Whether you're stocking up for your doomsday bunker or just looking for a convenient and delicious meal option, No Bugs Beef has you covered. Enjoy delicious, high-quality beef anytime, anywhere, knowing you're prepared for whatever the future holds. Start enjoying peace of mind along with your delicious meals. Get your family prepared for the chaos at badlandsmedia.tv/nobugs. And don't forget to use promo code BADLANDS for an even bigger discount, 15% off. That's badlandsmedia.tv/nobugs, promo code BADLANDS, 15% off. This is freeze-dried beef. It's high-quality beef, grass-fed beef that you can rehydrate. That's what you do. I make fun of CanCon because he was just eating them like they're beef chips. And then I'm picturing them just inflating in his stomach. Imagine, like, that'd be the funniest death ever. It's like, what happened to this guy? He ate an entire
beef chips
package of No Bugs Beef without rehydrating them. So rehydrate them first and then enjoy them. They're delicious. You can make stews with them, or you can put them in your survival bunker.
Nice. I gotta get me some of that, because I'll be honest. You know, it's funny when you think back, and you know, back in like 2012 when it was like Preppers. I can't remember what show it was. It TLC,
probably. Yeah.
You know, I was like, oh, these people are nuts. And now I'm like, God, dude, those people are the smartest people. Mm-hmm. You know, it's easy to make fun of, but you make the joke. It's like, look, I mean, if everything goes to shit, those are gonna be the people that are gonna survive and rebuilding the world. So
again, enemy framing, right? They've tried to frame Preppers as being crazy kooks in the woods for a reason.
They're the good kind of crazy, though. It's funny. Yeah. Like I made a joke to my sister-in-law the other day because we were talking about, you know, we're drinking. She was talking about the end of the world, and like I can't remember how rednecks factored into it. And I was like, hey, let me tell you something. If the end of the world comes and there's like a nuclear winter, the first people you're going to want to make friends with are rednecks. Okay.
Yep.
Because those are the people who don't play fuck around games, and they're going to be able to figure stuff out. Do you want some like gender studies major leading your little post-apocalyptic clan? I doubt it.
I don't know. Those chicks in the last segment, that's our future. Those are our future leaders right there.
Oh, speaking of post-apocalyptic bullshit, that movie or that show, The Last of Us. So I thought it was so stupid. But probably the gayest part of it is how like the rebel group is, what are they called? The Fireflies.
Yeah, like they're a bunch of SJWs.
Imagine, dude, if the Fireflies try to recruit me, be like, dude, that's gay as hell. Like, why don't you just call yourselves the Twinkling Pixies? I mean, you're not going to strike fear in anyone's heart with that moniker.
Yeah.
All right, let's jump into trash trends. So my trash trend of the week is coming to you courtesy of Ukraine. So I saw this clip earlier this week where apparently Ukraine is doing really well from all the cash infusions they're getting. So yeah. I'll let the clip go. Oh.
Despite the rockets, Ukraine's nightlife is rocking. The bars and clubs are full. The place is jumping, music pumping, drinks flow freely, and they dance like there's no tomorrow. And it's not just here. Fun fact, there are now more bars and restaurants in the capital than before the start of the invasion.
Yeah, man, what a terrible hellscape of war that Kiev is. It doesn't look like anyone's real worried.
Tell me this is all real again? People get mad at people like Chris Paul and Patrick Gunnels on Badlands for often alleging or at least questioning whether or not the catastrophic war statistics that we are being told about every day are real. Well, Kiev looks pretty fine. So...
Now, look, I'll grant this. We know that Kiev isn't on the front lines or anything,
yeah.
But it doesn't match the narrative that we're being fed. You know, all-out brutalistic war that's taking place. I'm sorry. It's just like, it doesn't. First of all, no one has really given a shit about it in Kiev. Second of all, it looks like my tax dollars are buying, you know, Vlad a drink at, you know, the hottest club down in Kiev, and it's utterly infuriating to see. I mean, like, I mean, I saw another video a month or two ago where, like, apparently the amount of Ukrainians buying yachts has skyrocketed as well. And it's just like, dude, when is this going to end? I mean, like, and it sucks too, because I think the vast majority of Americans actually see what's going on at this point. But we're sort of sitting here like, look, man, we're doing everything. We voted, and they fucked us over there too. But we're also not going to stoop to the Soros level of becoming a bunch of, you know, insurgents that are going to further their bullshit J6. And that's the other thing that's so insidious about J6, right? Is that it has not only is it, it's made any sort of public protest absolutely toxic on the part of the right. Meanwhile, you know, you can go to UT Austin or any of these other places and act like a utter fucking fool. And the media is going to act like, oh, these students are dictating our foreign policy. It's clown world, and it's clown world every week, every day, every hour. And thank God for social media, because at the very least, more people were able to see it.
Yep. And again, it doesn't mean everything's fake, but it means assuming that the same media apparatus that has terrorized us into every war that we've ever been in, unjust war that we've been in, to assume that they're now telling us the truth about death tolls in Ukraine is absurd. And like you said, Kiev is not on the front lines. But to me, this would be like the Denver nightlife thriving while there's a full-scale invasion of Kansas City. Right?
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. It's not real. It's not happening in the way that they are telling us. Is there kinetic conflict going on? Most likely, yes. And most likely that kinetic conflict is not between Ukraine and Russia. It is between the Spetsnaz and the Wagner Group and Azov Battalion, also known as CIA-trained, literally, Nazis. That's who's in Eastern Ukraine. That's who's always been in Eastern Ukraine. Turns out if you're not a Nazi, you really don't have much to fear from Russians.
Yeah. And, you know, I love the whole, it's so unmasking the Azov Battalion, and watching the media and the establishment try and justify supporting literal Nazis and all this, because it just shows, okay, we all know these people don't give a shit really about any of the stuff they say. But when you come out and you're like, yeah, they're Nazis, but you know, they're fighting Putin, so they're good. And they're only kind of Nazis. And
like the Canadian that got a standing ovation in Parliament.
Exactly. You know, meanwhile, your grandma who tried to go into Target without a mask on was called a Nazi back in 2020. Yeah. I don't know. It's just these people are so tiring.
My trash trend is I'll share my screen here again. I'm going to call it Administrative Trojan Horse. So it's a couple headlines that hit a couple days ago, the last 2 days, Tuesday, Wednesday. I thought they were interesting because they were coming over my normie Twitter feed, my lefty in my day job. It's kind of a lefty Twitter feed. And I saw them kind of celebrating quote unquote wins by the Biden administration. Back to back here, we have U.S. bans non-compete agreements for nearly all jobs. This was the Federal Trade Commission, basically went after non-compete clauses in employee contracts. And then right here, we've got airlines will now be required to give automatic cash refunds for canceled and delayed flights. This came down in a decision from the DOT, the Department of Transportation, under Pete Buttigieg. So let's go two-pronged here. On the one hand, I have a non-compete clause in my day job. I don't think it should be legal or enforceable. I don't think non-competes should exist. I think that they're ridiculous. They're totally anathema to the free market. The idea that if an employee of yours finds a better opportunity on the marketplace, that they're barred from seeking that opportunity out because they've signed a contract with you that says they can't compete with you, is completely absurd. So I agree in a vacuum that non-compete clauses should not exist. I also agree that the airline industry is ridiculous. The reason I call this a Trojan horse and a trash trend is because it is programming the American people into thinking that the solution to the airline industry and to non-compete clauses is government regulation mandates. Coming in and saying it's illegal, right? Where what we all actually know, once you stop being completely retarded, is that in an actual free market, by definition, non-compete clauses are not enforceable. They can't exist in an actual free market system where the courts are not enforcing non-compete clauses. And the same thing, and this is not the same thing as intellectual property, which I agree should be legal to have IP and intellectual property, because those are property rights. You can have property rights over stories you've created, things you've created, all that kind of stuff, patents, that should be protected under the First Amendment. And then I would also go with the airline industry. You know why the airline industry is the worst it's ever been? Because they keep being bailed out by the federal government instead of letting some of these companies collapse and a free market rise up to take their place. So the trash trend is administrative Trojan horses. We do not need big government to save us from corrupt companies and employer practices. We need a free market where the market would destroy those companies within a few years.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. If the government wants to get involved with the airlines, it would have been nice if they went after Boeing for suiciding a whistleblower, but instead we get this. And to your point, like, my wife actually brought this up to me yesterday because I hadn't heard about it. And I sat there and stewed on it for a second and finally arrived at the same conclusion. I was like, I believe that this makes sense. However, it should have been a business decision on the part of one of the airlines, like long ago, as part of, you know, good, fair customer service, or even, you know, a smart business decision. If you wanted to be the first airline to offer something like that, then you build loyalty amongst customers, not some government bureaucracy being like, you have to do this. It's like, no, that's
but
not.
They rely on government contracts.
Right. Yep. And that's why they have them by the balls, you know? And look, I'm not a libertarian in the sense that I think that, you know, everything should just be a business and free market. Mm-hmm. Obviously you need some semblance of government for certain things.
Right.
But this is a good example of where libertarian ideals make sense. It's not your job to get involved in this industry. I know that you think it is because, you know, it's air travel. And, you know, again, this is another example of 9/11 sort of cementing, you know, government control over the airlines, you know, problem, cause, solution. But it's right out of the playbook. And it, but yeah. It's so insidious too. This is how they take advantage of people, because on its face, everybody is happy about that, right? It's like,
right.
Oh yeah, no, I like the fact that I can get my money back for, you know, a canceled or delayed flight. I've been wanting that for years. But your brain sort of just stops there without thinking, what are they really after?
Yeah, and why did this exist in the first place? Because we didn't have free market competition between airlines, because the worst ones keep getting bailed out by the government that they have contracts with. And then young up-and-coming airlines don't even try because they can't compete. So it's the wrong, like you said, it's problem reaction solution. It's the Hegelian dialectic in full view. It also betrays a desperation on behalf of the establishment, where they're looking for some wins before the election. So this is how they trot a few out.
Yep. Yeah, and I'm sure we'll get more of those in the coming months. Everyone's just going to be getting more money and whatnot. All right, now let's get a glimmer of hope with some trad trends. So this clip, I believe it's out of the Tennessee State Senate. For those who don't know, Tennessee just legalized the death penalty for child rapists. And here's a little clip of a Republican senator and a Democrat senator.
Once again, I'm not trying to negate the lived experiences of these survivors of violent crime. I'm not. But don't you feel if a young child knows that their abuser is going to receive the death penalty, that it would deter them from reporting?
Directly from a survivor. My sister and I were abused by my father from a very young age. I just want you to know that I appreciate you pushing for the death penalty. I don't think it will stop people from telling about their abuse. Thanks. And then she lists her name. She's lived it. I trust her.
Representative Bain.
I mean, you can read testimonies again and again across the state, but the state intervening to kill a human being does nothing to deter the crime. It does nothing to heal the survivor. The state is intervening as a violent actor and ending a human life, which is not pro-life. And I'm not defending these individuals. I'm not.
Okay, so apologies, first of all.
You sure about that? Like the famous
yeah.
meme?
Yes. You sure about that? Yes, I sped that clip up too for all the pissers and moaners, so I won't do it next time. But there's so much stupidity in what she's trying to do. So first of all, she is defending child rapists, number one.
Yeah.
Number two, she is trying to argue against it from a pro-life POV. When she, and sorry, this wasn't the Senate, this was the House. She's a congresswoman who supports abortion. It's sort of like, you can't have your cake and eat it too. You know, it's like, oh, you know, you can go on a abortion baby killing spree all you want, but don't kill men who rape children. And you know, she's like, oh, this is not something that the government needs to intervene in, which again, her party is all about government intervention. Except apparently when it comes to doling out justice to people who commit the most obscene, vile, evil acts upon children. And, you know, it's just, I'm glad that these people are showing who they are. Mm-hmm. But to sit there and, you know, argue against something like that, it's just, man, you feel like you need a bath after you watch it. Just to even, like, having heard her speak, you know, someone pointed this out to me once. It's worth noting that the only real act of violence that Jesus condones in the Bible is Matthew 18:6, when he says, if anyone causes one of these little ones who believe in me to stumble or sin, it would be better for them to have a large millstone hung around their neck and be drowned in the depths of the sea. There's a reason for that. It's because, you know, there is nothing more evil than taking away the innocence of a child with these sick sexual acts. But you see it happening at a high grade level now with the whole trans agenda, right? Because when we talked about this a little bit last week, where, you know, with the trans agenda, they're trying to do away with truth, because if you can't tell, you know, if you believe there's no difference between a man and a woman, then you essentially believe there's no such thing as truth or lies.
Right.
But what they're also doing with it, in my opinion, is they're sexualizing children, right? Because if they're saying that the children can decide their own gender at the age of 8 and get sexual reassignment surgery, they are saying that children understand sex and they are sexual beings. And it's just this slow drip towards, like, all of a sudden, you know, 8-year-olds are actually fair game, which is disgusting.
What they want. Yeah. I would also say, you know what? I'm going to defend her. I'm going to say, if I want to take her at her word and say the government should not be intervening in violence, why don't we totally decentralize the justice system and all crime and all justice? And why don't we go to a world where the people police themselves using the Second Amendment and the people carry out their own justice, whatever the people decide, right? Because that's what she's in favor of, right? She doesn't want the government intervening in these kind of violent situations. So why don't we see how child rapists deal or survive in an environment in which we are allowed to do whatever the fuck we want to people like that? Why don't we see how that goes for people like that? And why don't we see how it goes for people who defend people like that? And then we can see if they want to have this conversation again in a different way.
Well, it brings up an interesting philosophic point with Jordan, because Jordan Peterson talked about this once, and like what the point of a government justice system really is. It's to prevent people from taking it into their own hands and going out for revenge, because eventually that's always just going to snowball into, you know, like the first act might be justified, say, like, you know, killing someone who deserved it because they raped a child or whatever it may be. But then all of a sudden, you know, some other people might just go out and start killing everyone because they wanted their land, and then claim after the fact that they were, they did these obscene things and they deserved to die.
Yeah.
But this is what sucks, is that they are eroding our justice system and making people feel like I don't have any other recourse but to take justice into my own hands at this point.
That's why I'd written an article a couple weeks ago, The Whole Temple, all about, you know, crimes against children, a lot of the Q drop stuff, and you know, one of the things I argue in there is at the very least, we need to stop apologizing for our viewpoints. This community apologizes too much. You know, we're not violent people. We're law-abiding people. We're constitutional people. But you know, if you think it would be a better world if people who commit crimes against children were dead or were drowned with a millstone around their neck, just own it. Just own it. Stop. This is not something to be ashamed of. You're not threatening anybody. You're not doing anything violent. You're just saying you believe in a biblical rule of law, a first principles rule of law, and that people who commit crimes against children should be hung from the neck until dead or drowned in the ocean. That is something to be proud to believe in rather than something to be ashamed of. And that woman is not the one who looks good in an argument with somebody who disagrees with her. So, yeah.
I mean, just like... Hey, could you imagine? I just imagine her sitting at a table arguing with that guy, you know, like, let's say it's a social setting. If I were sitting by her and I was one of her friends, I'd just be like scooting the fuck over, being like, I'm not.
Why don't we do a good little social experiment and put her in a room with a dozen victims of child rape, and maybe she can have this conversation with them face to face, and we can film it for education purposes, because her sort of premise is that they would agree with her. So I'm sure she wouldn't mind facing them, being put in a room with them, and we can see how that works in the free market of ideas.
God.
My trad trend here. That was your trad trend, right?
Yes, sir.
My trad trend. I'm going to bring up a couple little clips here. I'm calling this trend Trump 2.0, but more specifically, the establishment's reaction to the inevitability of Trump 2.0 is a beautiful trend to watch.
And dare I say something that will probably be termed the most uncomfortable thing that I've ever had to articulate out of my mouth from a political perspective. But I got to tell you something. As much as people may have been abhorred by Donald Trump's statement weeks ago, talking about how black folks, he's hearing that black folks find him relatable because what he's going through is similar to what black Americans have gone through. He wasn't lying. He was telling the truth. When you see the law, law enforcement, the court system, and everything else being exercised against him, it is something that black folks throughout this nation can relate to with some of our historic, iconic figures. We've seen that happen throughout society. So no matter what race, what ethnicity you may emanate from, we relate to you when you're suffering like that because we know we have.
And we've got another little one here from our friend Michael Rappaport, a never Trumper.
You know what's gonna be great when Donald Trump gets elected, and I ain't saying I'm voting for him, but when he does win, and he's going to win, the screaming and yelling that you ass blowjob miserable on college campuses are doing now, the screaming that you're doing at Jews about free Palestine, the screaming that you're doing at Zionists is going to be nothing compared to the screaming you're going to be doing come November when Donald Trump wins presidency.
And then one more. We brought this up on some shows recently. From Reuters, Trump 2.0, how U.S. allies are preparing for a second term. There is a trend where, despite the doom-mongering, despite the fact that they stole 2020, despite the fact that they will try to steal 2024, and maybe they will even temporarily succeed, does the cultural and globalist establishment seem, you know, the scene from The Dark Knight Rises, where you've got Bane in the room with the guy who paid him, the globalist who paid him, and said, I'm in charge here. The globalist says, I'm in charge here. And Bane puts a hand on his shoulder and says, do you feel in charge? When you watch clips from Never Trumpers like Stephen A. Smith and Michael Rappaport and the entirety of the EU and NATO talking about Trump 2.0, do they feel in charge? Do they feel in control? Because I would suggest that they do not, and that they know they are not. So that's it's a trad trend.
And it's such a, man, I mean, you can feel it in the air. It's such a different environment from the lead up to 2020. I mean, they really had a massive segment of the population right in the palm of their hands. They don't have it this time. They've got, a few idiots and operators, but the vast majority of people are like, okay, this fucking sucks. And, you know, if they try to attempt to steal in 2024, they're not going to have that kind of hypnotized support that they had in 2020 because, you know, people are really suffering this time around. You know, black people are really suffering. I got laid off my job. It sucks out there. It just does. Everything's going to shit. And it's really hard to get away with stealing an election when you don't have it, at least that modicum of groundswell support. Now, I believe that in 2020, we were still in the majority, but in 2024, it's a super majority. Yes. It's like that scene in V for Vendetta, right? Yeah. Where the way that they finally, the masses finally rise up, it's all of them. It's all of them marching towards the British House of Commons or Parliament, whatever it is, but it's literally so many people that the power structure and the guys who are pointing their guns at them, they're like, there's no point in trying to actually stop this from happening now. Right. Clearly, we are outnumbered. And
they don't have the public mandate. That's what we've argued on a lot of these shows, and they know they don't. I want to let people know, too, before we get out of here in the next few minutes, we've decided some of our last sections have been a little redundant. We're doing the Limp Hollywood, but we do that in a lot of other sections. So what we're going to start doing is just hitting you with a quick hit Holly Hope to end the show. You know, something good, saying that there are some good stories out there or some that are worth watching, send you into the weekend to look for something. So what's your Holly Hope?
I don't have one.
You don't have one this week? All right.
Well, okay. I'll give one thing. And I've talked about Shogun before. Again, I recommend it. I don't know if you've watched the whole series yet. It's been a lot of fun. My wife has really enjoyed watching it with me. They did a great job. I think the second season is going to be even better. They just did the finale.
Oh, they're going to do one? Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
So definitely recommend streaming that. Because again, I'm a big believer in everybody supporting what is actually worth watching.
Yeah.
And I mean, because it's the only way to send a message to prevent people from pumping out shitty content is to throw all of your mighty support into something that is at least mildly good.
Right. Absolutely. My Holly Hope, I'll just run a little bit of B-roll here. I tend to wait for shows to be done before watching them. So I'm going to watch Shogun this next week, I think. You want to share my screen? One that I was pleasantly surprised by. Did not think I was going to like this. Worked my way through it last week. Did not indulge Mrs. Bright with it because I think it's a little gory. I don't think it's the type of thing she'd like. Fallout on Amazon Prime. This is based on a video game. It's basically a post-apocalyptic America in which vault dwellers, who were kind of the elite liberals who were put into fallout shelters, are sort of emerging into the world 200 years later. And it's pretty, the sets are fantastic. The performances are great. Walton Goggins is in this and it's great. One thing I was worried about that I was pleasantly surprised by is I think that there's quite a few subtle takedowns of communists in this. There's also some communist sympathetic things in it, but it's much less woke than I thought we were going to get. I think there's actually some really good writing going on in here. This is from Jonathan Nolan, the brother of Christopher Nolan. So really would recommend this. It's weird. It's kind of funny. It's kind of dark. It's very gory, but highly recommend watching it. I'd call it a dark comedy, a dark sci-fi comedy, but I was very pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I saw Critical Drinker recommended it. My question for you is, for those of us who didn't play the video game Fallout, is it still worth watching? Because a lot of times I've found with these, you know, movies based on video games, you get a little bit more out of it if you played the video game first. Can it work on its own?
Yeah, actually, I've not played Fallout. So I came into this completely clean. In fact, it might be the type of thing you like more. For all I know, it doesn't even really follow the games that closely. Kind of just uses the premise. But yeah, I'm not a player of the games, so you do not have to be a fan of the games. It's great stuff. So yeah, okay. Highly recommend it. Let me grab a couple of donations here before we get out of here. We had a Boozer send over a boost for $9 last week and said, LOL, seems BB may be fired up today. I enjoy the show and wanted to show a little support. That was last week. Who knows what I was ranting about last week? I'm always getting riled up about something. Kimbo, This Is My Country 2, sent $25 over and said, I love this show. Two of my favorites. Julian, you were one of the major Twitter accounts that followed me. Thank you. BB, the answer to your question as to how do we know my faith? By faith, my friend. I don't know what the context of that was. But yeah, if you guys ever want to send in, if you're not watching live and can't send in a rant or anything, go to badlandsmedia.tv. You can always support with a boost if you want, and we'll get to it on the next week. Either way, liking the show always helps us tremendously. We did have a couple rants come in. S. Connor 2020 sent $50 over and said, here's some change for you gents. Your take on all this BS happening around us is much needed. So very much appreciate that. And AJC the third sent $20 over at the wire. Great show, men. Thank you. Good day. And God bless you all, Badlanders. And yeah, I think that was a good show. I think like we do every week, we have solved culture. They're going to screw it up over the next 6 days.
They certainly will.
But we'll be back again to solve it once more.
To shit fix. That's what we do. We're shit fixers. All right. On that note, we will see you next week for episode 12. Until then, mag on.
All right.